It is Live Music Friday here on WKAR's Current State. Welcome back. I'm Mark Bayshore. We've got Alex Mendenhall, Lansing singer, songwriter, musician, here back for an edition of Live Music Friday. We're going to open up with a track called Perspective.
They are only a figment of fiction's imagining, but seems the reality is less of a matter of fact, more a battle to what we think. So what do we think? Well, don't cry about the clouds. Don't let conditions outside your control ever get you down. Just try to smile somehow and watch your concern melt away in your day brighten all around. Take you off the ground. It's funny we see most everything is a universal truth. Most of what we think we know is just based on point of view. So take a little time to free up your mind, and you'll find that it's all subjective. Troubles come, but then they go. So all we really need is perspective. Perspective. Well, the grass is always green when you begin to read all of those lines written in between. Oh, in fact, all that is seen is just approximations our minds make when the light convenes. See what I mean? It's funny we see most everything is a universal truth. Most of what we think we know is just based on point of view. So take a little time to free up your mind, and you'll find that it's all subjective. Troubles come, but then they go. So all we really need is perspective. Perspective. Everything is a universal truth. Most of what we think we know is just based on point of view. So take a little time to free up your mind, and you'll find that it's all subjective. Troubles come, but then they go. So all we really need is perspective. Perspective. Just a little perspective. Perspective.
Alex Mendenhall, live in Studio S here. It's called Perspective. Alex's newest CD is called Into the Hinterland. He's got a special release show scheduled for Saturday, November 5th. Should be a good time at the Robin Theater in Lansing's Rio Town. More songs from Alex coming up, and we'll have some conversation here, too. There's an interesting story that goes with that title, Into the Hinterland. We're going to talk all about that here coming up before the hour is through. Today, Current State continues its election 2016 coverage as we head into the home stretch of this turbulent presidential contest. In just 11 days, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump will be elected as our next president. Before that happens, though, remember Bernie Sanders? Remember John Kasich? Many Michiganders still do. Their failure to clinch their party's nominations left their supporters feeling distraught. This week, Current State's Kevin Lavery met a couple of voters who say they're not voting Clinton or Trump, and they're explaining why they've made that choice. Kevin joins me now in the studio. Was it hard to find people to talk to for this story, Kevin?
Actually, Mark, it really was. There is so much rhetoric out there about choosing a side, whether that's Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, but there are those still out there who are basically saying none of the above. Jill Thurtell is one of those people. I met her at her home in Old Town Lansing. She's been very politically active over the years. Now she's battling some health issues that have slowed her pace a little. Jill was, and really is, still a firm Bernie Sanders supporter. She says he was the one candidate who most fully articulated a plan to resolve many of the issues that affect her in her daily life. And as you might imagine, health coverage was near the top of her list.
Like single payer. We need to get rid of these growing pains with these premiums. I cannot afford all my medications. Definitely college with my three kids, all college age. It's extremely important for me. I haven't been able to save anything. Social Security, I'm on disability. Obamacare was not what Obama wanted it to be. So I think that we had a much better vision.
I think we heard a comment from Jill's cat there in the background. And apparently she was expressing her opinion about Obamacare, but I don't speak feline, so I really can't tell you where the cat comes down on that particular issue. All kidding aside, though, Jill Thurtell has some legitimate concerns, even some she did not mention, like simply paying food and rent.
I'm sure there are people out there like Jill facing tough economic times. As we remember, Kevin, Bernie Sanders did go on to win Michigan's presidential primary in March, but the honeymoon didn't last long.
No, it didn't. Just 5 months later, Hillary Clinton became the Democrats' presidential nominee at their convention in Philadelphia. You'll recall the scandal that broke just before the convention, which many Sanders supporters accused then-DNC chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of basically encouraging the party to favor Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. And Wasserman Schultz ultimately ended up resigning after the convention because of that allegation. I asked Jill Thurtell what went through her mind as she watched the former First Lady take her spot as her party's presidential nominee. What were your feelings afterwards? Did you begin to feel disillusioned or alienated in any way?
Very much. Very much alienated. Yeah. It felt like a huge divide went up between the I'm with her and the burners, definitely. And it's still there.
What's it like to watch him stump for her?
It's hard, but I'm not angry at him. He has to do what he has to do. I trust Bernie.
So she's still loyal to Bernie Sanders then, Kevin?
Yes, Mark, but I'll get to that in a minute. You might imagine that seeing your candidate lose the nomination could drive you to apathy. Did Jill consider throwing up her hands and just saying, I give up?
Yeah, but not seriously. I thought, well, that's not me. I'll still vote for something. I still have to vote.
So Jill made the conscious decision to stay engaged in the political process despite being so profoundly disappointed.
Indeed, Mark. And I'll let Jill tell us some more about that.
So no, I was not going to be one of those people who sat it out and pouted like a child. No.
Do you know anybody who's on the verge of pouting, sitting it out?
I do know people. I definitely know people who are sitting it out. I know so many. Yes, definitely. I don't know if I'm more angry at them or Trump voters, to tell you the truth. I don't know. Because either way is awful. But so is a vote for Hillary. So, I mean... Honestly, I don't know. I guess the most harmless vote that's not mine is Johnson. So I don't know what to say.
And of course, Johnson refers to Gary Johnson, the former governor of New Mexico, who is now running as the Libertarian Party candidate.
So has Jill made up her mind? Did she reveal to you who she's voting for on November 8th?
Well, yes and no. Great answer, right? Jill Thurtell told me that she's, quote, 99% sure that she's going to vote for the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein. However, she did indicate that she is also considering voting for Bernie Sanders as a write-in candidate. So whether that means she's just 1% sure of Bernie Sanders, I just can't tell. Haven't we heard that term before, 1%? that seems familiar to me.
The 1%. It is familiar. But we don't have time to go there. Did you talk with Bernie for this story?
I did.
But not Senator Sanders, I mean.
I did. It was not Senator Sanders, though. That would be Bernie Porn, the founder and president of the political polling firm Epic MRA, based in Lansing. He is one of the most respected statisticians in Michigan. Epic MRA conducted two separate polls this month that looked at voter enthusiasm. Getting a sense of how excited people are to cast a ballot could be an indicator of turnouts on November 8th. In their phone surveys, Epic MRA asked respondents to rate their own level of enthusiasm for voting. So at the lowest was 0 to 3, meaning not very motivated to vote at all. 9 to 10 was the highest ranking, ready to go right now. And Bernie Porn found some pretty interesting results.
Those who said that they only gave themselves a 0 to 3 rating, which means they're pretty much not enthusiastic, that is the only group where Donald Trump leads, 28% to 24%. And the other thing that's important to note is among those who are least enthusiastic, the 0 to 3 rating, 24% of that group, much higher than the 13% overall, said that they are undecided about the election.
Does that tell us anything more about which candidate has the most enthusiastic supporters?
Generally, yes. The takeaway here, Mark, is that people who support Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, the two remaining third-party candidates, are least likely to actually go out and vote. These are people who apparently feel the most disconnection this year.
Okay, that's the Bernie Sanders side. You also found a former John Kasich backer, too, right?
Yes, I did. And a funny story goes along with that, too. Many people here at MSU know Rob LaDuca. He's a chemist by trade, but his credentials extend much farther than that. I don't want to reveal any more about him quite yet, Mark. I'll let this next clip say it for me. First, let's set the scene. It's the middle of February. There's still snow on the ground. Ohio Governor John Kasich is visiting Michigan State University for a rally at the Breslin Center. It's just about a packed house. Then we get to the end of his remarks, and it's time for some Q&A. And Governor Kasich calls on a guy in the crowd with a thick beard, shoulder-length brown hair, and a Hawaiian shirt. And here's what happened.
What do we got? What? Okay, yes, sir. Yes. Yes, sir. The Jack Black of Michigan State.
Hi, I'm Dr. Robert LaDuca, Associate Dean of the Lyman Briggs College of Science and Professor of Chemistry.
Nice to see you all. See you the next time. Thank you.
And Governor Kasich, you do have my vote in the primary.
What are you the dean of?
You were quite famous for that afterwards, I take it.
Yes, it was. That clip actually made it onto MSNBC in The Last Word with Chris Matthews. It was. I got lots of Facebook messages and texts from friends saying that they saw me on national TV. So, yeah, it was fun. I'd also done some science advising for the Kasich campaign before that, so I had an affiliation.
So the campaign knew about you to begin with?
Yes, but they didn't know who I was visually, so that was that was a fun moment.
So the joke worked because
there had
been no visual confirmation there.
Right.
If only John Kasich knew that before he called on Dr. LaDuca in the crowd.
You got it, Mark. I'd like to say at the outset now that Dr. LaDuca is expressing his own political opinions as a private citizen and not speaking on behalf of the views of Michigan State University. Rob LaDuca did vote for John Kasich in the presidential primary in March. He knew from the get-go he did not want Donald Trump. See, like Donald Trump, Rob LaDuca is a New Yorker. He remembers some of the negative publicity Donald Trump garnered years ago, including his very outspoken stance against the Central Park Five. That was the young African-American men who were initially accused of raping a woman in the park, but then were later proven innocent and exonerated. So Trump was a non-starter, as he says, and he has serious misgivings about Hillary Clinton's trustworthiness. That said, I asked Rob LaDuca about the impression this campaign season has made on him.
Did this election solidify your own thinking about politics, or did you learn something new about the way you think along the way?
What I seem to learn is that there is more of a undercurrent of American society that is in a way, looking out for their own group and not seeing us all together as Americans, whatever our skin pigmentation, our gender, our demographic background, ethnicity, faith, we are Americans. And there's some chinks in that armor now. And maybe they were there all along and it just became clear. And I'm very disheartened by that and saddened by that.
So I'll ask the same question, Kevin. Who's he going with on Election Day?
Well, here's a disappointed Republican who's hitching his wagon to Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. By the way, here's a side note. Mr. Johnson is in Detroit today for a campaign rally. No doubt he'll be keeping a close eye on one of our own congressional district races. The first district up in the Upper Peninsula is up for grabs this year. Turns out that the Libertarian candidate running for the first district seat is Diane Bostow, Gary Johnson's first cousin.
How interesting. So what's Rob LaDuca's hope for the future?
Good question, Mark. I think it's safe to say that he's tired of all the mudslinging. He tends to favor limited government, and he'd like to see what he calls principled opposition stand up against the next president, whom he candidly believes is going to be Hillary Clinton. But LaDuca, like many of us, is looking for a new start.
That's what I hope after the election is that, you know, maybe some of the garbage was taken out, so to speak, and then we can have a clean house, you know, and we're at the stage right now where it's messier before it gets cleaner. Everybody who's done a total house clean has been at that point. So hopefully it's right now it's the messier before it gets cleaner, and now we hopefully could have a more open and welcoming political discourse afterwards.
Kevin, it's 11 days before Election Day. Various polls have reported different results, but generally Hillary Clinton seems to have a lead over Donald Trump. It gets larger and it gets smaller. Is Epic MRA tracking that too?
I'm sure they are, Mark, but here's something else that's just as interesting about the stats that Bernie Porn told me about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
They both have such high unfavorable numbers in this most recent one, 60% plus unfavorable for Donald Trump, 52%, 53% unfavorable for Hillary Clinton. That's the highest numbers that we have had in terms of unfavorables for any candidate, certainly in my memory. And truly, it is a case of voting for what people would consider the lesser of two evils.
Lots to consider between now and November 8th. Current State's Kevin Lavery joined me here in the studio. Thanks much, Kevin.
You're welcome, Mark.
And we will remind you that WKAR will be here election evening until the Michigan races that you want to know about are settled, and we will provide live updates several times an hour throughout the evening and going late into the evening on election night here on WKAR, WKAR.org. Our Twitter feed will be busy that night as well. I'm Mark Bayshore. It's a live music Friday, which goes without saying, on Friday on Current State. Alex Mendenhall's back here with us for a return performance. He's sounding great this morning. Here's a song called Song for the Moon.
Getting late, you finally make it home. I see your face and out of space alone. You know I know I'm not the only one to sing to you after the setting sun. Seem to go from high to low so fast. And though you grow, it's not your one you cast. Well, I stay awake until it's dark outside. And it's like you even push and pull the tides. Well, there's so many stars, you so many scars. But something about you makes you best by far. And all through the night, you climb to new heights. Still holding my heart, cause you're my favorite light. Do you know that down below I'm yours? And
long ago, but there were so many more who used your light to get them through till dawn. Needed your presence long after you'd gone. There's so many stars, you so many scars, but something about you makes you best by far. And all through the night, you climb to new heights, still holding my heart, 'cause you're my favorite light. Sometimes you feel so far away and you call it apogee. But even then I'm still caught up in your gravity. There's so many stars and you so many scars, but something about you makes you best by far. There's so many stars, you so many scars, but something about you makes you best by far. And all through the night, you climb to new heights, still holding my heart, 'cause you're my favorite light.
Alex Mendenhall performing live in Studio S here today on Live Music Friday. It's Song for the Moon, and Alex accompanies himself on percussion there with his feet. He plays tambourine and cajon, one with each foot. So he's solo, but he's doing all of that. He has a new CD out called Into the Hinterland. We'll hear more from that CD and talk about his upcoming performance at the Robin Theater here in just a few minutes on Current State. Glad you're along today. I'm Mark Bayshore. Can an entire book be written about 10 seconds of football? Our next guest and a colleague have done just that. The last 10 seconds of the Michigan State football game at Michigan last season will forever live in the hearts of Spartan fans. The Wolverines led 23-21 and only needed to execute a punt from the MSU 47-yard line to close out a victory. Things didn't turn out that way, though.
Well, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free! It's up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game! Unbelievable!
Bad snap. Bobble. Scooped up. Here come the Spartans. Down the sideline, racing into the end zone.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Racing into the end zone is Jalen Watts Jackson. Touchdown, MSU.
Touchdown.
Folks, no flags. Piling on each other in the end zone. It's over.
Michigan State is still the big boy on the block in the state of Michigan. A shocking ending to this rivalry game.
And that score gave MSU a 27-23 win for the ages over their rivals from Ann Arbor. The Spartans are in the midst of a five-game losing streak now, heading into Saturday's rematch with the Wolverines. So MSU fans are hoping for a similar miracle tomorrow. Author and sports broadcaster Jack Ebling, along with co-author Joe Rexroad, has written a book about that game and its aftermath. It's called The Perfect 10. Ebling talked with Al Martin, the host of WKAR's Current Sports, about the book. He says when the play happened, he was at the game with a friend and colleague who's as big a Michigan fan as there is.
I was sitting next to Tom Crawford. I had just come across the press box all the way across to congratulate him. And I figured, okay, there's nobody back. They're just going to punt the ball. It's going to bounce around for a while. And then I saw that they weren't blocking anybody, and they had gunners on both sides. And then the snap was a little low, and Blake O'Neill decided he was going to play Australian rules football. And next thing you know, Grayson Miller has the hit that you see on the cover here. We call it the Heimlich maneuver. He just happened to hit his arm, and there goes the ball.
Exactly.
And Jalen's got it, and here comes a sea of white down the sideline. First thing I thought was, there has to be a flag. I mean, I've seen Michigan State get flags for breathing.
Exactly.
And I said, okay, I don't know how many there are going to be. There has to be one. And when I looked around, I said out loud, there has to be a flag.
For you, where does that moment rank when it comes to the most memorable Spartan plays that you have professionally covered?
It's probably tied with the 1974 Ohio State ending when Ohio State was number one. Michigan State wasn't on the radar. The Spartans won with an 88-yard run in the final minutes. And then for 45 seconds, no one knew who had won the game. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State fans are jumping up and down. And Michigan State fans are jumping up and down. It took 45 minutes for Commissioner Wayne Duke to figure out who had won.
Wow. That and had to be so odd.
The funny part about that, Al, was that in the midst of all the pandemonium in the Michigan State locker room, someone came in and said, stop, Troy Hickman has been killed by a falling goalpost. Troy was the assistant equipment manager and beloved by the players. And in the midst of the celebration, the goalpost had come down, hit him in the head. And now you imagine going from the highest high to the lowest low imaginable, and everyone's crying. 45 seconds later, Troy Hickman walks into the locker room. It had all been...
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, what a moment.
What a moment.
That's hard to top, I see, Jack.
And then Wayne Duke had to go tell Woody Hayes his team lost. You can imagine what that was like.
I would have loved to be in a fly on the wall for that
But this
moment.
One was right there. And in terms of seeing some fan base that was so confident, some would say arrogant, some would say smug, mm-hmm. and then to have the football yanked away, Charlie Brown, it's hard to top that one. What we have in this book, Al, and I think it's my favorite part of the book. In the final 42 pages, we have reflections from Michigan people, Michigan State people, people whose lives have basically been changed for the past year because of that play.
Wow.
And, the director of the Spartan Marching Band, John T. Madden, he had got everything ready to go, and they were heading to the exit. They weren't even going to do the postgame show.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he said, you know what? Get the stuff out. We're going down on the field.
How about that?
Yeah, Tom Izzo, who could not see
exactly
the play. He had been on the sidelines with his son Steven for the entire game. He had taken so much abuse coming in and stuff being thrown at him. And finally he said, we're getting out of here. And he'd gone up the tunnel. And then he heard this noise like he'd never heard before. And he runs back down the tunnel. And you imagine security keeping Tom Izzo out of the field so he couldn't see anything. And he's just trying to guess
exactly
what had happened.
He didn't know what was going on in that moment. Right.
Chris Baldwin, the famous Surrender Cobra.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
guy.
Right.
He's in the book.
He's in the book.
Yeah, we interviewed him, and his sister's a Michigan State graduate, and she's only bothered him every single day of his life. But he has that on his resume, mm-hmm. the fact that he is the Surrender Cobra guy.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That is golden. Yeah. So you really, crossed your T's and dotted your I's with this, Jack. When did yourself and Joe decided that you wanted to make the perfect 10? I mean, when did it hit you like, okay, we need to put something out. This would be kind of fun.
I got the idea riding home with Tom Crawford. Now, he couldn't speak. He was in a catatonic fit at that point. So I said, you know what? There's really something here. We're going to talk about this for 50 years.
Yeah.
We have to record this. We have to somehow preserve this for posterity. So I started thinking, what could we do? How could we do it? And then I met with Rex Rode the next night. Mm-hmm. We'd done the television show. And I said, I need to run an idea by you. Tell me if you think I'm an idiot. And he jumped all over it. I didn't know he was going to go to Nashville mm-hmm. and be the columnist for the Tennessean, which complicated things. But for his half the book, he is probably the only author who ever wrote a football book between periods of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, my goodness. He's so he worked on that while at the Stanley Cup Finals?
During the playoffs, yes. During the games.
My
yes.
goodness.
Yes. So, we talked to over 350 people, and it's 284 pages if you count the foreword by George Blaha and all those things. So,
right.
Some tremendous pictures by Matthew Mitchell. And we hope that people like it.
We are chatting with Jack Ebling, his latest book entitled The Perfect 10.
This cover shot, you can see the look of panic in Jake Butt's eyes.
Yes, you can.
He is looking back, and just as Grayson Miller and here comes Matt Morrissey delivering this hit, and Jake Butt is saying, oh, bleep.
Right, right.
And here comes the ball up in the air. I thought the guy who could have been the hero of heroes a couple times was Jake Butt, one with the most heroic tackle if he'd made it 1 yard sooner. But two, if you imagine a three-man blocking shield up in front, if he had just noticed that, hey, they got four guys and no one's touching him, I'm just going to lurch forward and get
right.
a penalty, illegal motion, 5 yards, they reset, they bring in the gunners, everything is okay.
there's so many different scenarios that could have played out in that 10 seconds.
We go through about 30 scenarios of how it could have been different.
Sheesh.
We hope a lot of people will like this book, and we think Jim Harbaugh won't be one of them.
Jack Ebling with WKAR's Al Martin, host of Current Sports. Jack's new book with co-author Joe Rexroad is about last year's Michigan State-Michigan football game. It's called The Perfect 10. Well, this weekend, a small band of questionable characters will dress up in garish outfits and mingle after midnight. Are they getting an early jump on Halloween? No, it's a local revival of a cinematic cult classic. Back in 1975, relative unknowns Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, and Barry Bostwick shocked and awed audiences in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. What makes this particular film so unique is not what happened on screen, but the audience participation that goes on in the aisles. You might say this was interactive media long before the digital age. Now, a new local Rocky cast will stage a monthly production in Okemos. We welcome three guests now to talk about this most recent revival. Todd Haywood's coordinating the production at Studio C in Okemos. Welcome back, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, actor Michael Boxleitner, who plays the mad scientist Frank N. Furter. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Sally Hexel plays Janet, the female lead made famous on the big screen back in 75 by Susan Sarandon. Sally, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Todd, you've been long acquainted with Rocky Horror Picture Show. When did you first see it? What did you think of it at that time?
So the very first time I saw it was with my partner, David. He took me to go see it, and I sat in the audience going, why won't these people shut up? I'm trying to watch a movie. And just fell in love with the culture and the atmosphere that was created in that space. And that was at the Spartan Triplex.
Yeah, there's an interesting story. How did you get started with that?
So after David and I had a separation, I went back to try and figure out what it was about this movie that he was so fascinated about, and just fell in love with the group and fell in with some folks who were trying to revive a cast to do that. And I was like, hey, I do theater. Let me help you out.
So it was not love at first sight for you.
It was not. I was like, they're loud.
Quiet. I'm trying to watch something here.
Get off my lawn, you kids.
So moving from acting to directing Rocky Horror Picture Show, how does that work? Is this supposed to be a scripted formal performance, or is it more impromptu?
Well, it's definitely more improvisational. Both Michael and Sally have only seen the movie. They've never actually been in the theater during a production. So what I keep telling everybody is, this is improv. Our goal is sort of mirror what's happening on the screen, but have fun.
Michael, you play Frank N. Furter. He's the mad scientist at the heart of the show. What's it like playing him? How do you get into that character?
Well, a little fact about me, I'm just crazy anyway. So
okay.
It helps. It helps a lot.
You don't have to be crazy, but it helps.
No, and I get to wear some pretty awesome heels too. I'm super tall on them, so that's pretty fun. I really don't know. There's not really a
role like this you've ever played before.
Nothing like this.
Sally, you portray Janet. She's the love interest of the other male lead, Brad. Your characters find yourselves at this crazy convention where you meet Frank N. Furter and his creation, Rocky. Did you grow up? Tell us about your history with this and any midnight showings you might have seen.
I have absolutely no history with this either. Haywood and I and Michael did The Diary of Anne Frank a while ago, and we've all stayed really close since then. And so he contacted me a few months ago and was like, I have this role that you might be interested in. And, you know, it's so iconic.
What did you feel about the role when you started learning more about Janet and then projecting you into that role?
She has been kind of interesting to kind of pick apart. Like, Susan Sarandon did such a good job. And, you know, with the new Rocky Horror on Fox, you have all of these different portrayals that you kind of get to take in. But ultimately, I'll try to make it something that's my own and have fun with it and have fun with the people who are on stage with me, because we're all fairly close. At least the leads are anyways. So it's nice to, like, play with friends on stage.
We're talking about a new upcoming local production of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, the 1975 cult classic with Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, and Barry Bostwick. It's been an audience participation event for more than 40 years now, and it will be so again this weekend at Studio C in Okemos. Todd Haywood's the director. Also with me, actors Michael Boxleitner and Sally Hexel, who portray Frankenfurter and Janet. Todd, how do you want to put your own spin on this? I mean, you said you've given the actors rein to improvise here, but what would you like the audience to walk away with after they see this?
I want, when the audience walks away, I want them to A, say, gosh, that was so fun, I want to come back. I think that that's really important as to what's happening. But the second thing is I want this to be a safe space, right? I mean, that's what we created in the early 90s. You know, this was before we had gay-straight alliances happening in high schools, and there was not a real large LGBTQ community in Lansing at that time that was very out. So we really created a safe space where people could try on different roles and ideas and experience that in a non-judgmental and safe space, and I'm hoping to recreate that space again.
Why do you think this is held up for so long?
Look, it is held up for this long because, one, it's just fun. Right. I mean, the music is fun. It's catchy. It's a bad movie, but it's great music. I mean, it's a terrible movie. Cinematically, it's a terrible movie. But the audience participation then also engages this into a very unique creation of community. And I think that that's really important at a time of digital media when we're on, you know, Facebook and Twitter. There's not that connection that we're seeing that we can get in the theater.
Did y'all know that Fox had planned what it had planned when you decided to stage this? I mean, yes. Sally alluded to it a minute ago. This was just on Fox, its yeah. treatment of it. Did you know about that before you decided to
yes.
do this?
Or
you,
yes.
You did. Did and Sally, you liked it. You said you enjoyed it.
I saw little bits and pieces of it. It was definitely a reimagining of the classic.
Michael, did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I have seen it, and I thought it was terrible. I thought it was actually worse than the original.
I've heard terrible things.
And here's why, Mark. I don't think the directors and the production team could decide whether they were trying to be faithful in the recreation of the original or if they were trying to reimagine it for their own. And as a result, it failed on itself. The one good thing I would say is that I absolutely adored the new time warp that they did. In fact, I asked the cast to learn that. You guys have learned that, right? You've learned that new
thing?
Yeah,
you
we
have
learned that.
Learned that, right?
Learned that. Good.
Tell us a few more details of this weekend's performance.
Sure. So you can get your tickets online. And I would encourage people to reserve them online because it's only a 127-seat theater. So, and we're already 3/4 full, which is great.
How do you two feel about moving forward with this? Are you nervous about this? This is.
I'm nervous right now because I'm not quite sure what to expect. Like I said, I've never been to anything, any version of this.
You've never been to one, let alone be in one.
Right, and so I think it might be a little bit overwhelming, but I think that it's going to be really fun once we kind of loosen up and get into it and like feel the energy of the audience.
You're confident about that too, Michael?
Yeah, I'm definitely anxious about it just because I've done improv before, but I've never done improv like this. It's very different than anything I've ever done before. So
improv
it's,
like you've never seen it before.
Yeah. So
improv in lingerie.
It'll definitely be interesting, but I know we're gonna have fun with it once we get in the swing of things.
We've been talking about a new take on an old classic. This weekend, a small troupe of actors will put their spin on the 1975 cult film, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. The productions are at Studio C in Okemos. Todd Haywood is the director, and actors Michael Boxleitner and Sally Hexel portray Frank and Furter and Janet, respectively. Break a leg. Have fun.
Thanks,
guys. Very much.
Keep control.
Well, Lansing singer-songwriter, musician Alex Mendenhall is back here with us on Live Music Friday. His new CD is called Into the Hinterland. He is preparing for a Saturday, November 5th release show at the Robin Theater in Lansing's Rio Town. Let's hear a track called All My Life.
hold on, just give me a minute. Well, I don't know if I'm over the limit, but I've got something on my mind. I hope I'm being realistic. Well, it's no good being too optimistic. So would you give me a sign? Oh. What must be something in the way you move that makes me certain it's not to forget everything but you? And what was some say so not so hard to describe? But maybe you're the one thing I've been missing all my life. Oh, my life. Now don't go misunderstanding. Well, on my pose in my dream I was standing. I usually keep it subdued. See, I'm scared you're disappearing. And soon my heart's gonna stop after hearing that you found somebody new. What must be something in the way you move that makes me certain it's not to forget everything but you? And what was sensation not so hard to describe? But maybe you're the one thing I've been missing. My life, oh my life. Wait, well, I know this song left to say, and chances are that you don't feel exactly the same way, but I'm laying it all out on the line, 'cause if I miss my chance with you, I know I'll lose my mind. Hey, 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 yeah. What must be something in a way you move makes me certain I start to forget everything but you? And what was sensation not so hard to describe? But maybe you're the one thing I've been missing. Well, baby, you're the one thing I've been missing. Oh, my life. My life, oh my life, oh my life.
Very nice performance. All My Life. Alex Mendenhall of Lansing, singer, songwriter, musician. His new CD is called Into the Hinterland. Welcome back, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is your third release, Into the Hinterland. The title of the CD, I take it, is pretty significant. You went into the hinterland, beginning so to speak. These were some very well-populated hinterlands, some of them. Tell us about your journey here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there were some very well-populated hinterlands, and there were some...
New
York City was one of them. Yeah, there were some more sparsely populated areas, rural Virginia, and so I've gotten lucky to be able to travel all around the East Coast, especially. And so this song is about the physical journeying into the hinterlands of some places that I've never been before, but it's also about more of a mental journey into places and in both my sound and life that I'd never explored before.
And this was called the One Track Tour.
That's correct.
7 weeks altogether, New England, Appalachia, the Southeast, and the Midwest. 43 gigs?
Yeah, in 50 days.
23 states. Toronto was on the tour as well. Just broadly, describe the impact that tour had on you.
Yeah, well, you know, I was lucky as a kid to be able to travel a lot around, but I was always with family, and I traveled all this time by myself, and it forces you to kind of put yourself out there more than when you're with other people. And it was definitely something that made me feel both big and small in the world at the same time. It's a good feeling to have.
That's a great way to put it. Was there a single most memorable stop on that tour?
I can't say that there's a single most memorable
one's
moment.
One's popping into your head right now.
I spent the night in Plattsburgh, New York, which is right across Lake Champlain from Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. Unbelievably beautiful. And it was an extremely windy day crossing Lake Champlain on the ferry, and the whole ferry was going back and forth, and my truck I thought was gonna roll over. But all that time, through all the noise and the waves, there was just this beautiful landscape of mountains and snow, and it was so beautiful.
Vermont in northern New York and far eastern New York, nothing like it. That borderline between Vermont and New York is very, very special. I've been there several times. How does Into the Hinterland compare to other releases? I mean, we're led to believe here you've taken a deeper dive into soul.
That's right.
That's reflected in this CD then?
Yeah, I think with my first two releases, I was really trying to find myself in the music and to try to find my own voice. And I think that I kind of let each song sort of just go whichever direction they wanted. And for the first time with this album, I've really had an idea of the kind of music that I wanted to make. So I think it's focused, and there's a spectrum of music, but I think it's focused all around this idea of soul music, and there's it ranges to some folk stuff, some more cinematic sounds, and then some more Latin-y kinds of things.
I mean,
as well.
You say soul, I immediately think of rhythm. Are these songs more rhythmically driven, would you say?
Yeah, I would say so. I would also say that they're more vocally driven.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Do you sing these? Do you sing these quote soul songs differently than
Absolutely.
You sang earlier?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They definitely. I was sort of focusing more around the folk kinds of things. It just so happens that folk music is a little easier to voice, and it doesn't require as much from you. So it's easier to write in some circumstances. In soul music, there's a lot more happening with the voice, and so it takes some more practice to get yourself up to that point,
It would seem a band, a rhythm section, might help you create a more soulful sound and create something more rhythmically driven. I know you play with other people. You're here solo today. How often do you play solo, and how often do you have bandmates?
Yeah, this is actually, for this show coming up at the Robin Theater, November 5th is the first time that I'm playing my music with a full band, and I'm really excited for it. It's like you said, it's so hard to emote some of the sounds that I want to make with just a guitar and even with the percussion. There's something about having saxophones and bass and keyboards that really bring this album to life.
Alex Mendenhall is our Live Music Friday guest today. He'll put out a new CD called Into the Hinterland with a show November 5th. At the Robin Theater in Lansing. Alex Mendenhall, there's no H at the end of that, by the way, just Mendenhall.com. You're back, you brought your tambourine and your cajon back, okay, and you play these things with your heels while you're playing. So you don't have a band, you've still got your feet.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get that routine down and become adept at that?
To adapt to things, you have to have hard circumstances, and it's really just so difficult to get along with drummers. It's just easier if you do it yourself. No, I'm joking. It wasn't terrible. It's sort of like marching in place, and I was in marching band, and you've got, you know, your left foot, my left foot doing the beats 1 and 3 and my right foot doing beats 2 and 4. And I'm just mixed up a little bit from there.
Gotcha. Well, yeah. So many people tap their feet. You've just really leveraged it. That's all you've done. Alex Mendenhall performs at the Union Cabaret in Kalamazoo on November 1st, just a few days away, back at the Robin Theater to release the, for the CD release on November 5th. Other November gigs, the Waterfront Bar and Grill in the Lansing City Market and at the Lansing Brewing Company, also a show at Fabiano's Riverhouse Grill in Portland. Silver Bells in the City is on your itinerary,
yeah,
too.
Excited.
November 18th. AlexMendenhall.com. The new one is called Into the Hinterland. Alex is going to play us out after I remind you that on Monday's Current State, a Northern Michigan tribe of Native Americans has filed suit against the state in an effort to designate hundreds of square miles of land around Petoskey as a new Indian reservation. We'll talk with M Live reporter Garrett Ellison all about it. Also, the East Lansing Film Festival begins its 19th annual run next week. We'll dive into some of this year's offerings with festival director Susan Woods. Glad you could join us here today on Live Music Friday. Alex Mendenhall plays us out. Go Green.
Said I need a little room just to keep my head on straight, keep my mind out of the gloom. 'Cause I feel restless standing in one place, and I find myself running off to find some space. Hey, hey, hey. Feeling starts in my soul, and before I realize it, I lose all of my control. Some sort of super chronic wanderlust is taking over me and telling me I must. Whoa, I swear I'm not unhappy. It's just something hiding deep inside my personality. Walls make my whole world feel much too small, and I need to find out where my heart will lead. And I know this might sound strange, but today I think I've got to run away. I think I've got to run away. I wanna feel the breezes blow.